The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. With Shenhua and Jiangsu both back to winning ways after some substantial criticism in recent pods, who are we going to inspire with some vitriol this week? There's plenty of action at the top and bottom of the table for us to reflect on, including that massive game in Nanjing, as we get stuck into all of the races that matter and look at the table once again. I am your host, Steve Crooks, and we are joined by the usual crew, our regular experts on all matters Chinese football. Cameron Wilson in Shanghai. How are you doing, Cam?
Oh, man, terrible sunburn. Just spent a little bit too much time outside and my Scottish tan has been ruined.
It's the first mention of Scottish tan on the pod, hopefully the last as well. And joined also, returning to Beijing from a trip, Brandon Chemers. How are you doing, Brandon?
Yeah, I'll say I was shirtless for a little while last night, but not quite as bright and glowing as Cammy, although I somehow managed to avoid a night in jail, and I'm back in Beijing now.
And I am the only person on this pod who's kept their clothes on at all times over the past 24 hours. You'll be pleased to know,
listeners. What a boring day you've had, Steve.
I'm not sure that you tune in for... I know. Well, yeah, when we start doing video pods, all bets are off. That's all I'm saying. Let's go back to the football. I'm not sure that listeners are interested in Scottish tans or arrests, but, you know, we can touch on those stories as we get there. Let's start with that match in Nanjing, then. I mean, firstly, Brandon, how frustrating was it for Guan to see them come unstuck against a team that seemed to be in all kinds of trouble prior to the game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was unbelievably frustrating. A lot of it comes down to Bakambu missed a number of key chances. Yu Dabao is not a central defender, and he proved that once again. Augusto hit a post, and most of all, it was the biggest frustrating thing was just Jiangsu didn't want to play football in the second half, and I think they played 10 minutes of actual play out of the 45 because they were rolling around the grass. Wu Xi and Zhang Yan and a couple others were just really bad when it came to that.
Yeah, one of the blights of kind of CSL football, actually, it's got to be said that. Cam, I'm going to come to you on this. I have a theory that losing this game might actually be the best thing that's happened to Guan all season, because they've really, it feels from the outside like they've been stumbling a bit under pressure, they've been scratching out wins without playing well for a while, that the kind of chase from the other teams at the top's clearly been playing on them. Maybe being out of the limelight for a bit and in the chasing pack might reinvigorate them, or do you think this might be a blow that they struggle to recover from?
I don't know. I saw the game, actually. I thought Guan were very poor. I think it could have been much more than just 1-0. I don't really know what went wrong. I think Brandon probably have a better take on that, but I'm not sure. I think Guan's position traditionally in the last few years has been as a competing team for the championship rather than the leader, so it might cause them to regroup and think about what's been going wrong and come out stronger, yeah.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that, being closer to the action, Brandon? And also, I mean, we see criticism for both Bakambu and also Schmidt coming in again. Presumably, Bakambu is a bit more deserving of that criticism?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a lot before on the pod. There's definitely issues with Bakambu. He hasn't really been firing on all cylinders. He missed a couple of real gimmies last night. And honestly, I totally disagree with Cammy. The 1-0 was all... Jiangsu barely went forward after they scored that first goal, and which came out off of a penalty. They really didn't produce a lot of chances, and until the last 5 minutes of the match, when Guan was sending everyone forward, including Kim Min-jae at times, you really didn't see very much push from Jiangsu. If Bakambu scored one of those goals, Guan would have scored one of those chances. It would have put Guan up 1-0, and it would have been a different match. The penalty hadn't happened at the time, and so But Kambu is coming under a lot of criticism, deservingly. Schmidt, no, we don't even need to talk about that. But I think one point where you are right about this is that hopefully this will be a wake-up call for the club in the locker room. It's really needed. This isn't a loss to SIPG or something like that. They really need a wake-up call after this. And the club does too, because now it seems apparent that they have to replace Jonathan Vieira while the window is still open. Another thing to note is that Zhang Shijie also is missing. And so without Vieira and Zhang Shijie in the middle of the midfield running things, there's really no creative player. And Renato Augusto was left to basically fend for himself for much of the match.
Okay, well, moving on from Guan, it's time, I suppose, to talk about the team who are back at the top of the table, somewhere that we've seen them a lot over the past decade or so. Cam, I feel like they've sneaked up on us a little bit, Evergrande, but they've won 10 games straight now. They've only lost against both Beijing teams, which is remarkable when you consider the shower that Renhe are this year. I mean, Elkerson leading them to a dominant victory in the derby there. They've done a lot of this with Talisca still to come back. It feels to me like they've got a lot of their old kind of swagger back, which we haven't seen for the last year or so.
Yeah, Elkerson was quite a controversial transfer for a few reasons related to the fact that he's hotly tipped to be a naturalised Chinese player in the near future. But regardless of whether that happens or not, he's still a very effective player, as he showed in the derby just the other day with 3 goals. He looks like as effective and lethal as a player as he's ever been, certainly on that showing. But I was surprised. I know Arnev haven't had a great season so far, but they are usually pretty competitive against Evergrande. For some reason they weren't, I don't know why, but I was quite surprised imagining the victory. I think Evergrande have been kind of sneaking up, but I mean, let's be really clear, they've never been more than like a few points behind Guan and SIPG, so I don't think it's a massive surprise to see them take the top spot at this point.
Yeah, and just a couple of points kind of covering those three teams at the top. Brandon, I mean, you mentioned that Guan will be disappointed. Shanghai International Port Group probably disappointed to have dropped points at Chongqing as well. I mean, although Arnautovic came in kind of scored a towering header in his debut in the second half, he's got to be a factor in the title race now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what it really comes down to is that you have all of the top sides still need to play each other, and that includes Shandong in fourth place. So all four sides will play each other in the final 10 games. Most of them will also play Chongqing as well, who are up sitting in fifth, as well as Jiangsu, which could may or may be a bigger issue depending on how happenings go there. So I think it's really going to come down to a lot of these head-to-head games, and I don't expect we're going to see teams dropping points as long as we get past the summer months, because, you know, with the rains and with the heat and everything, there tends to be issues in July and August, and after that there's enough time. There aren't a lot of games in September or October, so there's plenty of times for breaks, and those that will bring in issues of their own. But I think as long as things stay pretty much as they are, and especially in a couple weeks' time, the last game before a long break will be Evergrande and Guan. That's gonna give us a much clearer picture of where the table is, what the setup is going to be, I think.
Yeah, I think you made a good point in that they all need to play each other relatively late in the season. They've all got some fairly kind fixtures over the next couple of rounds as well. Do you see this being another situation where we have all three teams at the top almost all of the way, Cam? Do you think that the Champions League and Cup commitments might be a factor as well?
I hope so. I hope we see a good race. It's been not that exciting the last few seasons. Well, it's gone. I can't remember now, but I just don't remember being a race with three teams in it towards the end of the season. So I just hope that continues. The ACL is going to be a factor for both. As I say, Guan doesn't have that to worry about, so that's something in their favour.
Yeah, we'll keep monitoring it as we go, and hopefully we do still have a three-team race to talk about through the season. I mean, I think at this point last year we still had four teams in it, but then Shandong and Guam both dropped away relatively early, so let's see how that holds up. Moving our attention to the other end of the table, well, Brandon, this isn't something I say very often. I've got to admit you were right and I was wrong. I was really sceptical about the signing of the Wookiee, and it looks like he's single-handedly keeping Shenhua up with his goals. An argument for being the signing of the season so far.
Yeah, for sure. That goal that he scored against Renhe to open things up was a thing of beauty. And he definitely, the CSL, there aren't a lot of players like him that have his level of talent. And I have a feeling he's going to continue making an impact. And, you know, Shenhua is getting away from the relegation zone. They're going to be safe for a while, and the big win over Renhe definitely helps things out.
Yeah, how is the feeling around the club, Cam? Do you think it's time for them to start feeling a bit more relaxed, or you know, are they still very aware of the fact that they're not that far out of the zone and they've got that horrible run at the end of the season, so there's still quite a lot of points to play for right now?
I think there's more optimism than there was, obviously, because there have been a couple of decent victories, but still, you look at the table, it's far from ideal, and I don't think there's any complacency just yet. I think people are, there's a lot of the fans are saying that Shenhua should basically give up the cup match this week, which I think would be very disgusting if that happened. But nevertheless, that shows you that the fan base doesn't really consider the last few victories to be particularly decisive. But I don't think Shenhua were, at the end of the day, I don't think they were going to get relegated anyway, and I think Kim's goals have won us some vital matches. Just don't see how Shenhua can really, I really don't see them going down in any way. I think now, I think it's, in my mind, I think Shenhua not really have to worry too much about relegation as long as they win the games that they should win from now until the end of the season.
Famous last words. I mean, it was looking very, very concerning for a little while, but it is the complacency that kills you in this kind of thing. Before we start to look at the three teams at the bottom who are clearly the most likely to go down now, I think, Brandon, how far kind of up or down the table would you go in terms of saying who's safe? I mean, there's what, 11 and 12 points for the sides at the bottom. We see kind of Taidar on 23, Henan on 21, which should be safe. But people have pointed out, I think Changchun were relatively safe in mid-table at this point last year before they fell apart.
I'd almost go as high as Dalian Yifang and RNF right now. If you're looking at, we talked about with the leaders, if you're looking at the bottom of the table, it's the same situation. Everyone sort of has to play everyone, and how things go in these head-to-head matches could really make a difference. I mean, you look at Shenhua coming up against RNF this weekend. If RNF loses that, it's the two big losses in a row. You could potentially see them just losing momentum or the wheels falling off down there. And so maybe, you know, you have to really be looking everywhere. It really just depends on how things go when these sides meet, because there's going to be a lot of these six pointers per se as the season goes on. And Shenhua especially has a number of them in a row.
Yeah, and critical that they do well in them, because then they play all of the top sides at the end, so hopefully they're not needing points by then. I think we should look at the teams at the bottom. Maybe, Cam, let's start by looking at the team at the very bottom. Do you think it's fair to say that Renhe are doomed? I mean, there's a lot of football to go, but they were abject against Shenhua, and they've lost seven in a row.
They have, but any team which loses 9-2 on aggregate over two games this season at Shenhua, you have to really wonder if they belong in the CSL. Of course, according to the table, they're only 3 points off safety, but they're by quite some way the worst team I've seen this season. But you know, there's still what, 11 games to go. Anything can happen. But I would, if I had to put money on a team going down, I would put it on Renhe right now.
Yeah, I think it's easy to back actually both of the sides in the relegation zone. I mean, Tianhai, we fancied them to be okay at the start of the season despite all of the drama because of that quality in the squad. they've only won one game from 19, and yet they're still not bottom of the table just because they seem to draw so many games. I mean, they've been busy with some ins and outs. They've brought Park back as their manager. Do you have any optimism for them, Brandon? Do you think maybe we'll see some political favours even with the rumours around them being a kind of feeder team for the CFA?
Not really that optimistic for them. It's really hard to say because, you know, Hebei is equally very bad. And most of those, I mean, Shenhua is really very bad, but I just think Shenhua, especially with the two new signings, they'll find a way to stay up. Even when we talk about Shenzhen, there's a lot of bad at the bottom, but with Tianhai, I think that their biggest issue is it seems to be financial. They did bring in a lot of decent players on loan in the offseason, but if the rumors that keep floating around them are true, they're not really paying their non-loaned players. And so there's a lot of dissatisfaction in that camp. There's rumors of managerial firings and things going on. It's not a good situation. And I have a feeling that we're going to see a lot of managers fired. But at Tianhai, they could be joining Yuanhe in the League One next year.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of potential movement down there as well. As you say, there's lots of kind of six-pointers coming up, and just a couple of wins can really catapult any of those teams. So let's not write them off just yet, but it does look grim for them. That's enough kind of talking about the table. Let's go to our regular Phenomenon of the Week section now.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
And the winner of the popular poll last week was our special guest nomination from Suning of the two red cards in one game for Jiangsu as they fell apart prior to that redemption story that we saw at the weekend, of course. Cam, your tactical nomination almost got you in there. You came second with Eddie, so you get to have the second vote this week, but you didn't quite crack it, which does mean, Brandon, you have the floor to go first with your nomination for Phenomenon of the Week.
Okay, well, I was going to put Kim in for his performance, but we've already mentioned that, so I'll give it up to the Jiangsu Stadium experience as a whole. I had my issues in the away end to begin with, but one of the scoreboards in the two boards, one of them, the whole game was flashing different slogans about building the benevolence of the party and Dahe and all of these different things. It was amusing to see.
Jiangsu Stadium experience. That needs to be a t-shirt or a band name or something as well. Excellent nomination there. Cam, you get to go second. Who or what has caught your eye in the wonderful world of Chinese football this week?
I'm going to go for a very boring, conventional nomination and disappoint everyone. It's going to be Elkerson for his hat-trick and his... First game or second game back with Evergrande? Anyway, it was in the derby, so I think that was quite phenomenal.
Difficult to argue with that as well. I am going to reprise a previous nomination that I had, and it's another football-related one as well. Somehow he didn't win the vote for won the goal last time, but it's going to be Chongqing's Fernandinho again because he scored an absolutely amazing goal running past what seemed like the entire team in that game against Shanghai International Port Group. So a bit more football than you're used to in the votes section there, listeners. Hope that's not disappointed. We look forward, as always, to seeing how your votes and or comments and or write-ins go.
Listeners' questions.
So we're going to have a little bit of a mailbag special and catch up on some older questions that we've been saving for a rainy day like this from the listeners. But just before we do that, I want to follow up on your nomination, Brandon. The away day experience, I mean, do you want to share with the listeners how you ended up shirtless and what remarkable kind of going on there were with the stadium there?
Okay, I haven't been to Nanjing in a while, so the last time I was away to Jiangsu, they were playing Zhenjiang, which was a very different experience in a much smaller stadium. So I'm not sure if this is new or not, but the Nanjing, for one, this is purely as a foreigner an issue. They they had machines to read your Chinese ID card, and if you didn't have one, you had to go into another long line to show them your passport or to show them a document or picture of your Chinese ID card or whatever. And then the guy's like looking over my passport for literally 2 minutes, looking for the date of expiration, and I showed it to him and he wouldn't believe it, and just going back and forth. Then there's a bag check, which I've never seen, which anything other than bigger than like a fanny pack or purse you needed to check, which you have to be thinking about for away days, especially a trip like this. A lot of people were headed to the train station after the match. They had backpacks. It created a major issue. And then the typical process for an away game is you don't wear colors when you enter the stadium. You change inside the stadium, and then when you leave, you change. Well, because of the way the security with the bag checks, all of most people's t-shirts or most people's non-Guan gear were in their backpacks, which were at the bag check. They wouldn't let people go down to where that was, even though it was still in the secure area of the stand. So it created a major hassle, a major bottleneck, a lot of issues leaving the stadium. And after going back and forth with them, their only answer was, you have to change your shirt. And it's like, well, I'm telling you, I will if you let me get my backpack. And then we just went back and forth, and it was just like, okay, I'll take off my top. Is that okay? And they're like, then they finally let me through. So, yeah, I'm not gonna say Jiangsu was it was by far the worst experience I've had from a general security and overall experience. Although I am going to Zhengzhou this weekend, so it could possibly get worse. I've had some experience in Zhengzhou before, but it wasn't a well-run experience, and it goes to Cammy's China hates football sort of thing or fan culture. It made a real hassle for a lot of people in the away end last night.
The security's definitely getting tighter. I think a lot of what you described was actually the case when we went up to Gongti earlier this year as well. Gongti's up there with some of the most difficult away day experiences I've ever had, just for the fact that there is no shade and cover in that stadium. And one of the downsides to being a traveling fan is that you have to be around the stadium at a ridiculously early hour and in the stand a few hours before kickoff. And you talk about a Scottish tan, you just get absolutely fried in that stadium. It's pretty brutal. Cam, what are some of the worst or more memorable away day experiences you've had over the years as well? There's a Nanjing feature there again.
Yeah, my first trip to Nanjing involved a trip back in a coach which had a window smashed out by the Jiangsu fans, and the bus had been attacked before actually we got on it. So there was the usual kind of Chinese standoff between the bus driver representing the bus company, the police, and then some fans, the Xinhua fans, and then I'm not sure who else was involved, but there was a lot of bickering and arguing about, you know, who was going to pay for the repair and so on and so forth. How would the fans get home if the bus wasn't allowed to drive on the road with a boarded up window? In the end, it was decided to board up the window and then drive back. But I remember before that even happened, there was thousands of Nanjing fans were running towards their way end inside the stadium. From the seated areas, they were making their way along towards the end where the Xinhua fans were. I mean, there was plenty of guards on duty, but it was like literally thousands of people. And I've actually got a video of it. I should really post it on my Twitter at some point. But that's we were talking about Jiangsu last week. That's a bit of a follow-up to the discussion from last weekend. But yeah, what the story Brandon's talking about is just very typical of going to a Chinese football game if you're home or an away fan. I mean, these days, we all have like facial recognition for going into the North Terrace at Hong Kong. I mean, it's ridiculous. Well, why is your identity an issue? I mean, it'd be different if I was going on a flight or at the airport or something, but this is just going to a football game. I just think it's completely overkill, and I don't think it encourages people to go and watch football.
Yeah, and there's definitely encouragement needed sometimes when you see the fare on the pitch. To flip things over to the other side, any recommendations for kind of the best stadiums to visit as an away fan? I mean, I have a personal you know, I've never been to Yuexishan. That's the next one on my list for sure. I have a big issue with the fact that so many of them are just kind of nowhere near the city themselves. They're these big, nice-looking, you know, modern athletic stadiums with a big running track and so on. So I've got a lot of time for both Tianhe and Gongti as a kind of cultural experience, at least, because those are proper stadia, despite the teams that play in them. Brandon, which stadiums would you recommend, or which away trips have you enjoyed most as an away fan?
Tianhe is nice. They have covered places to wait and stuff, so it's slightly better from that. I think they're more used to the away fans, and their home fans tend not to be very bad, so it's a fairly easy process. You mentioned Yuexishan is just a great stadium. You know, you go up the hill and then go down into the stadium. It's a really unique process. I mean, there's a lot. In general, it's not that bad. I think, as Cameron mentioned, the process is pretty standardized at most stadiums. If we're just talking about from just the general process standpoint, I just think it was a real hassle that I haven't really witnessed anywhere else. But when you talk about, I mean, the stadiums, it also depends on time of year. You know, if you hit Dalian in the summer when you have the beach and stuff, that can be a great trip. And I'm really unhappy that Guan is playing up there on a Thursday. I have to miss that one. But yeah, I think that some of the better stadiums are where you have a better presence of home fans as well always makes for a more interesting day, of course.
As long as they're not kind of running up and threatening you, whether shirted or not. Anything to add to that in terms of particular away trip recommendations, Cam?
I'd have to nominate, Yanbian. I believe you're with me, Steve. That was a really memorable trip, although I'm struggling to remember.
Unforgettable.
To remember the details due to the stupor which certain individuals found themselves in on that trip, on that very, very amusing weekend. But it was quite funny. I think the highlight was eating some of the local delicacies in the restaurant.
Woof woof.
Yeah. I mean, I just remember Charlie, one of the guys, saying, "You know what? I'm a dog lover, but I would eat it again. It was delicious."
That was for everything apart from the actual game. That was an absolutely amazing away trip, and that was where a bunch of us got threatened by a guy who must have been about 60, who was shirtless, who didn't take well to our antics after the game, and was actually in pretty good condition, and maybe we did stand down as a result of that. Moving swiftly onwards to more football-related questions in the mailbag. This is a really good one, actually. This is in from Kevin. With the CFA and General Administration for Sport seemingly able to be the invisible hand of the transfer market, have they considered encouraging any ethnically Korean players to play in South Korea to gain experience, or is this even crazier than anything they could come up with? I mean, I don't know if maybe it's more organized than anything they could come up with. Are you aware of this being tried in the past or mooted at any point, Brandon?
No, and I don't really see what. I mean, I guess it would help learning from a different sort of league and a different environment, but if that would be true of, I mean, the ethnically Korean, I guess their advantage is that they already speak Korean, but it would be equally true of the Chinese players as well. So I haven't really seen anything like, I've never heard of anything like that. They're fairly happy, although there does seem to be a lot of ties, a lot of coaches going back and forth in the old days, at least, between Yanbian and Korea. So maybe there are some managers or coaches or people, football people, coming over to Yanbian at times to help out. But I think that's the extent of it. And I think anything else, that's about the extent that should be.
Yeah, Brazil is very much the new Korea when it comes to kind of minor ethnicities of Chinese footballers, as we appear to be seeing. moving on to something which is also kind of administrative. Question from Ruchesco here. Any sense, this is a new story that we've spoken about a while ago, but any sense of when teams owned by non-government affiliated companies will have to rebrand? And do any teams have pre-existing names like Guan or Shenhua that they're allowed to fall back on? Cam?
I'm not sure exactly what the status is with this rule. It's been talked about for a few years now, and they were saying that there was going to be a deadline, I believe it was next season, where all names of CSL clubs would have to be corporate neutral, as the phrase they used was. But as to which clubs have names which are considered already corporate neutral, Guan and Xinhua would be the two obvious ones, I think. Tianjin Tida and I think Shandong, although they changed the name, I think, in the late 90s, I think, according to some which I read, their name change was long enough ago to be considered to be no longer particularly corporate. I'm not sure whether that's justified or not. Henan as well, Henan Jianye, or Henan Construction, I think they're actually being called at it all the time from the very start. So then another one. I'm very pleased to see this rule come in, but it's not actually been implemented yet. So like everything else, like all the rule changes we discuss, we really need to wait and see until the actual and until it actually comes to the surface, rather than being something which is rumoured to be coming in at this time or some later time.
Yeah.
Yeah, although what we have seen some League One sides and some lower sides starting to make the change. So I think it has the potential that it will happen. And I think the only other side that would sort of be grandfathered in, I think, would be Changchun Yatai, which has been that since with Teda, they came in or were formed in 97 and have kept that same name ever since.
Yeah, I think like with all news stories in Chinese football and with our kind of studied absence of any discussion of Gareth Bale in this week's pod, we'll believe this one when we actually see it happen. And until then, everything really kind of is all speculation. Some other older questions, which I've always wanted to come back to, and I think we've got a good window to do this week. These go back to when we were talking about transfer rumours and naturalisation a while ago. And there's a couple of questions about what the impact of kind of investment and the, you know, money that's thrown into the game has done to domestic players as well. I mean, firstly, this one in from Adam Missouri. Are Chinese players getting richer as well, or is it just foreign players? Because, I mean, there is, Cam, a salary cap in place, right?
There's supposed to be, but I don't know if that is actually enforced or not. The transfer caps is also something which seems to have strangely left the narrative. I'm not suggesting that they've stopped doing it, but it just seems to be not mentioned anymore. For the salary cap, I think Chinese players are getting richer and they get paid much more in China than they ever possibly could anywhere else, due to the fact that Chinese clubs need to play at least 8 Chinese players. So all the best Chinese players are always going to be playing in China, unless they're so good and there's a desire to let them go and move overseas, as in the case of Wu Lei. The top Chinese players will get paid a lot, but your young guys and the guys coming through probably still paid peanuts.
Yeah, Brandon, do you think that the money actually holds the Chinese players' development back in a way, in that we used to see a lot more of them going, you know, overseas, whether it were to European leagues or even to play in Korea and kind of test themselves against a higher standard?
Well, I think that's more just because it was a different time and the players, they're sort of, the overall impression of Chinese players was much better. It was coming right off of, I mean, we're talking now almost 20 years ago after the 2002 World Cup that made the difference. I think nowadays it does hold back to some extent. I mean, I've always sort of had this feeling that these guys are making a lot of money, at least by the typical Chinese standards, and as such, they tend to just be happy with the way their life is. And you know, maybe they're in the national team, maybe they're not, and they're just an average player. You know, I think that the national team guys, that they're sort of that push to maybe be better, but a lot of them, and we've seen it with Evergrande, with just the bonuses and everything, they're making more at Evergrande than they would overseas. And so there isn't a lot of motivation, except if it's really personal motivation to be the best that you can be, which you would imagine that footballers have, and that's why they're successful. Without that, it's just like, why leave? You're making more than you could anywhere else.
Yeah, and I think, Cam, we've spoken in the past as well about how this kind of trickles down to squad players, and you get lots of guys who are on a reasonable contract at a CSL club, never really see much game time, and there's just no incentive for them to drop down to a smaller club or a lower league and test themselves.
I think you've got to compare it with the situation in a lot of European countries. If you're a player playing for Man City, and you're reaching the end of your career. You say you've been, say, like a journeyman who's been good enough to get in the first team, but has never been a star. Maybe you get to your mid-30s and it's time to move on. I mean, you've got so many options. You can go and play in the Championship. You can go and play even lower down. You'll still be going to a vibrant city with a vibrant club, and there's fans there, there's football in that town, there's football in that community, and there'll be like a pretty decent standard. It'll still be pretty professional. Maybe, of course, it won't be as high as Premiership, and that's the situation in most countries where football has been around for a longer time. But in China, it's just completely different. With a few notable exceptions, there's not really anywhere to go to. For example, quite a few players have left Xinhua and they signed for Shenzhen. Shenzhen was doing okay a few years ago, but I mean, now they're basically heading for the third division and they basically don't have much of a fan base anymore. And that's just in Shanghai, it's a city with, 25 odd million people. I mean, if you're out from a city, say, for example, like, let's just take Kunming, for example. I mean, there's no professional club there at all. So imagine you're from that part of China and you're playing in the East Coast for one of the big clubs, and then you get too old to play in the East Coast. You get too old to play for a bigger club. You want to think about, well, maybe I could go and play for like a professional club near where I'm from. There's just no option for that. And that explains why so many players basically are career reservists and they spend their entire career at a CSL club, even though they don't get a game, is because they simply don't have a better choice.
Yeah, and a lot of it comes down to that kind of football culture and that kind of depth of the pyramid that we do lament sometimes. One final question. I'll come to you with this one, Brandon. This kind of came from the same discussion, I think, from Sebastian Hassett. Reflections on how Chinese footballers have changed since the Big Bang. I'm assuming we're talking about money there rather than the start of the universe. Are they better technically or tactically? Are there any discernible changes? I mean, on the one hand, you could actually argue that the standard's gone down, I think, but I don't know if you can blame that on the money so much as, you know, has there just been a golden generation that passed and the constant kind of changing of the rules has not exactly helped? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to compare. A lot comes down to the rule changes, which have become so common that we're getting different rules every 6 months or so. You have better foreigners for sure. I mean, you're seeing stars and players that we never expected to see in China. You're seeing guys who are still relatively, or at least still have some good years left in their careers, and it's not the aged guys on their last paycheck. I think it's been good for the game. I think it's been a way that has, because the quality of the domestic players and the quality of the domestic players has gone down. As you said, we're in sort of a wasteland when it comes to Chinese talent these days for the most part. And so I think having these really strong, really really well-known and excellent foreign players has sort of helped keep the fans really interested in ways that they might not otherwise be, at least sort of the neutral fan. So I think it's been good for the most part. I think it is what it is, and I mean, it looks like we could potentially be seeing a whole new boom going on as of late.
Yeah, anything to add to that, Cam? Do you kind of agree?
I do agree with Brian. I think also to go back to the discussion about the generation around getting on for 20 years ago now, when China were in the World Cup in 2002. I mean, there was some very good players in that crop, but you have to put it in perspective. Even that crop wasn't really that great. I mean, after all, they got knocked out of the World Cup without scoring. They got three straight defeats. But it's just unfortunate that China's never been able to build upon that. I think the problem really now is that it always seems to be two steps forward and one step back in China. It's like the domestic player quality is definitely going down. There are signs that there's a rejuvenation in that, but it's going to take a while for that to come out. But now, as Brandon said, there's definitely much, much better foreigners, which I think on the whole has been a very good thing. There are some exceptions. There have been spectacular failures, but you've got to look at the overall trend, and that's been a very positive thing. It's just it's just an interesting time in general, I think, as well as the kind of narrative now that seems to be reading the tea leaves. It seems to be an increased foreigner allocation that seems to be coming back. We've already changed the rules just at the halfway point there to allow an extra foreigner to be on the bench. And the latest indication is that they're going to bring back the plus one rule next year. So, yeah, it's this Chinese football, nothing ever stands still. Things tend to go around in circles a little bit, but yeah, it's all about the rule changes in recent times, and I'm afraid I don't see any sign of those slowing or becoming more constant. I think it's going to be more and more changes in the next few years.
Well, we do get at least one or two podcasts a year out of explaining what the latest rules are to people. So for that, we could at least be thankful, I suppose. Nice kind of varied discussion going through some historical mailbag questions. I hope you enjoyed that as much as we did, listeners. I think it's time to draw this week's episode to a close. If you have enjoyed this, then we will be back again in the future, of course. And in the meantime, feel free to rate, review and share the pod, and even check us out on Patreon if you could be so generous. Brandon, thank you for keeping your shirt on throughout this entire recording.
Yes, and I hope to do so as well next week in Zhengzhou.
Don't we all? And Cam, hope that's kind of Scottish tan recovers nicely before we get to speak again next time.
Me too, and I've had my shirt off during this entire recording because I just have to keep the aircon off. It's a little bit too noisy in the background, so I'll leave everybody on that wonderful vision and say thanks and good night.
The listeners will demand video pods at some point, I'm sure. But until then, this is your audio-only Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football. I've been your host, Steve Crooks. Thank you for listening.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。